Just don't make us drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, don't drink the Kool-Aid. I wouldn't want you to drink the Kool-Aid anyway, that stuff's nasty. All that sugar, you don't need it. All that red dye and all the various other things associated with nasty stuff. Okay, we've been talking about history of HR. And the history of HR was, at least from what I've been telling you, was crudely cut off right after the Industrial Revolution. But I had gotten to the Industrial Revolution and pointed out that between employees and employers, right, there developed, of course, the pressure for returns, which meant essentially that people were made to work faster and faster and faster, more and more unsafe situations, et cetera, et cetera. And we ended up with what I call a versus relationship, us versus them, so to speak. And this, as I went on to tell you, was long-term inefficient and created a waste of energy, brain power, focus by the employees on what they were doing and on the employers with what they should be doing in terms of rewarding and supporting employees for work done well. So this inefficiency here, which I told you was common rule up until the 60s, because every company had the same problem, they were all suffering from the same issue here, was offset by those imported vehicles, which almost immediately proved to be better equipment. But out of this versus relation also came, which we mentioned, unionization, which had a long and bloody history from this point on till into really into the late 1950s, let's call it 1960, when things started to settle down at least a little. But this unionization situation where companies battled against this, right? We don't want our employees to have the power of number, right? Instead, they wanted to have the power of themselves and not share it with the employees. And this is a typical human response to a typical difficult situation. We try to clamp down. We try to make things the way we want them to be. And this is the way managers saw it, and it's certainly the way the workers saw it, that their only safety was in unionization so that they would have a number of employees who could threaten to walk out in situations which were construed to be harmful. So this came forward, was finally worked out, at least from a legal point of view, in the National Labor Relations Act that I mentioned to you last time we were here. No, the National Labor Relations Act of 1935. Essentially set up the rules of the relationship between companies and unions, saying what companies could do and what they could not do. This was later added to, 22 years later, was added to telling what unions could do and what they couldn't do, so that the relationship is spelled out by the National Labor Relations Act and interpretations and augmentations over the years to come. So it sort of settled down to where we had a reasonably productive workforce with a reasonably high-paid middle-class group who was making good money out of unionization pay. Companies, of course, that weren't unionized had to match those salaries if they wanted to get good employees. So in general, the middle class was being paid reasonably well, which fueled the 50s and the 60s, et cetera, when there was a fair amount of growth. And less separation of income as there is now, you know, huge differences between then and now. So all this sort of started to calm down as we moved into the 1960s, I can still say that. However, starting in the 1960s, we had a huge change in the workplace situation, because there were a number of new laws and acts being issued out of Washington governing the workplace and governing the relationship between employers and employees. So we had a lot of things like safety regulations, pay regulations, safety, pay, and one other natural, one other.
EOE?
Pardon?
EOE? Equal opportunity employer?
That's going to be over here in social. So this is company applied rules. So safety, pay, there's one more that's immediately slipping my mind. But then we have social over here, which was EEO, Equal Employment Opportunity, Affirmative Action, Equal Pay Act, etc. I think what I'm missing, a couple here, but it's fraud. So we had two different types. Can you see the board, or is this thing blocking your view?
It's fine.
Do people use this thing in any of your classes? Do they stand up there with lecture notes? And, so we have these sort of separations. This is the way things were historically. What the government did was based mostly on industry. This is how these industries should stay safe. This is how they should pay, et cetera, et cetera. Then we moved to the more newer version of these regulations, which were across industry because they were aimed at society as a whole. So equal employment opportunity, for example, covered all companies, 15 or more, by and large, not just industries that made steel or the railroad industry or whatever. Hours of work too here. And also age, how young you could hire, this and that. So there were a bunch of sort of direct focused certain people at certain ages can work certain industries. You know that now, don't you? In terms of being underage, you're not supposed to be able to run compactors at McDonald's or whatever, trash compactors. And the number of hours you can work as a student is truncated and during the weekdays and this and that. Okay, but as a social situation here, all these came out basically in the late 50s, 60s, and 70s, interestingly enough. Okay, so what we have then here is a change in how things were being carried out at the plant. And if companies wanted to be successful, they needed to have an awareness and an ability to deal with all of this new stuff, including, of course, we have INCLCOMP, international competition. International competition, which did not have the high pay that we have, didn't have the versus relationship that we have. And so they had efficiencies that we didn't have. And so that required our companies here to become more efficient and effective at working and making things happen. Oh man, a whole box of chalk. So, all of this stuff creates these pressures on companies to do things differently than how they've been doing it. And in order to generate more profits and respond to different new situations coming in, well, you tell me, what would be typical management response to doing this? Here's the way I think about this. If you're walking around India somewhere and you see a orange tiger, I would have said a tiger and some people they have Siberian tigers, not in India. An orange tiger approaching you, are you going to want to have a committee of employees or a committee of anyone for that matter to help you decide what to do as the tiger bounds towards you with that toothy grin on its face? Of course not. It'd be too slow, and it would be too difficult. The human reaction, which is why we're here today and having, and our ancestors weren't eaten by tigers, was to do something, make our own decision, and make it happen immediately. So this is something which I believe has come up through into us today. We got a problem, we solve it. And we usually solve it by tightening up on stuff. So companies, during this period of time, became tighter and tighter and tighter as they tried to control their own workforce in the face of more competition, which is to say, you know, lower pay, harder hours, less concern about the welfare of the employees, hey, you're working here, do it my way kind of thing. And all of us, I would assume, have worked for people who were unmitigated unmitigated jerks. My wife, when she was working, said when she didn't see her manager, it made her day. When she saw her manager, it ruined her week, which I thought was an interesting way of looking at it. And indeed, the majority of quits that happen, voluntary quits that happen, are people who are dissatisfied with their immediate supervisors, interestingly enough. So, this tightening up then created even worse situation for American businesses, in my opinion. Now, slowly but surely, we're beginning to see what I may have mentioned to you before is the idea of a compassionate organization, which does not mean somebody, a company that's slack, but it does mean a company that takes into consideration the well-being of the employees because they're aware of companies like Southwest Air, who work constantly at being supportive and friendly and support and helpful and encouraging fun on the job, and their stock went up between the years of 65 and 85, 2,200%. So fair gain over a period of 20 years. And none of the other airlines could do what they did. Why? Because they still held on to that clamped model of how to control employees. Don't let employees come up with ideas. Don't let them act on their own, et cetera, but keep everything under control, tighten under control with the lid screwed down tight. Doesn't work in this day and age. And you know that because you've been raised to have the thought that you can think, that you can contribute, and that you don't have to, we hope, put up with jerky managers. This is sort of something that's been evolving over time. Certainly my grandparents were perfectly willing to put up with all kinds of stuff, right, in order to keep their jobs. I tell you, my grandfather helped invent the atomic bomb. Nobody in their real mind would do that anymore. They probably could. I would hope they would quit first. He has a plaque from Truman saying, thanks for helping us kill 300,000 people, or words to that effect. What I'm saying here is there's a huge change. The immediate response is to clamp down, but the successful organizations do just the opposite. They take the clamps off and allow people to use their own brains, schedule a lot of their work into more flexible work hours, all that kind of stuff. And it makes for a smarter and faster company, but it's hard for companies to adopt to that. So, as you think about hiring, as part of your HR strategy here, remember I talked to you about HR strategy as being taken out of the org strategy. What can we contribute to get to the goal from time one here? The HR group takes out of the org strategy what we have to do. We have to have X number of employees, the right person at the right place at the right time over here. The HR strategy then has to take into consideration that more and more new employees are going to be later off in the semester. I'll fall off the stool, fall asleep off the stool, hit my head on the board. That's always good for that. And the idea here that more and more we need to take our hands off. And that focuses into our strategy to where we want people who have a certain kind of attitude for our company, whatever that might happen to be. Willing to be problem solvers on their own. And there's any number of cases, if you ever take my cases class. They're going to do my case next week called AES. It's an electrical company that built electrical plants, they have no human resources group at all. Why? Because the employees do everything. They just say, we want to build a new plant in a new electrical facility in Russia. Who wants to go to Russia and help set up the new plant? And 15 or 20 people volunteer, and they send them to Russia for 2 years to set up the plant, get the paper, get the workforce together to build the new plant, right? No human resources involved at all. And that's sort of the wave of the future, perhaps. All right, so where this starts is the idea of getting sure we have a person who temperamentally fits in with what we need. And, of course, the first place that we're going to look for our employees of the future would be where, would you think?
College.
Not there.
Let's say
your change is only medium-sized change. It's not a little change. It's not a big change. Sort of a medium change.
What are you trying to...
I'm changing from this to this, whatever this happens to be.
Do you need somebody with special qualifications? Do you need somebody with...
There's going to be job descriptions, job specifications, et cetera, et cetera. But where am I going to look to fill? Where are the people going to come from initially that we're going to use over here? Where would you think?
Canada.
Pardon? Canada? No.
Within the company?
Within the company, our existing employees. So how do we do that? We do job postings. And we post the job with the various skills and abilities required. Employees that are interested in doing that apply. There's a lot of advantages. We, as management, know whether or not this person has been fitting in and will fit in to our new workplace, whatever it might happen to be. That's one thing. It's obviously cheaper to find this person as well rather than doing a huge job search situation with interviews, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we have a person that knows the company, we know them, and of course, your OB class, you know how employees feel about the possibility of job postings and opportunities posted by the company for them. What's their response?
Positive.
Pardon?
It's always positive.
Always positive. And that means morale improves, right? Because the employees see the opportunity to move up or move out or change their jobs or whatever it might happen to be, the company is willing to consider them. So that's a good thing. So we take our job descriptions for what we need out here, specifications, we'll have some discussion on how to create those, and hold them up to compare the applicants that apply through the job posting. Typically, the job postings are well understood by employees, so they can almost self-select themselves in or self-select themselves out of the application process. That's convenient, too. We have less people trying to bug us for jobs for which they're not qualified, so that's cool. And if we cannot fill all the positions that we have through job postings, we might also consider, where else could we get them?
Headhunting.
Pardon?
Headhunting.
Outside the organization. That's sort of the easiest way. We're not going to headhunt for people who are working, you know, low-level custom interactions. But what we're looking at here, then, is the idea of hiring people. We're going to spend a fair amount of time doing discussions of selection, which I'm just writing hiring here now. Hiring people for the job. Typically when we hire, if we don't hire internally, we're going to be hiring out of what's known as the relevant labor market. Relevant labor market, not the relative. The relevant labor market, in other words, the appropriate labor market. Put a little colon right there. I'm going to tell you what it is. The relevant labor market is the geographic area from which we expect to draw a certain level of employee. The relevant labor market. The geographic area from which you expect to draw a certain level of employee. Well, how's this work? If you're hiring a director for marketing, would you look in a small area or would you look in a large area?
Probably
large. large because you want to be sure that you access the most people to find the best person for such an important job. On the other hand, the size of the relevant labor market for ditch digger would be
pretty small.
Do you want to hear my ditch digger joke, by the way?
Please.
It's really good. You'll use it, I guarantee you. It's not even dirty. All right. You got two guys down digging. Well, it is dirty from the standpoint of digging, okay? They're digging a ditch, and they're covered with dirt, and they're really hot, and they hate it. And they say, how come we have to dig? And the boss doesn't come down and dig. He just drives around in his Escalade and looks important. And they say, I don't know. We'll ask him when he shows up. So the boss shows up eventually. You hear the crunch on gravel as he wheels in. And they, one of the guys crawls up out of the ditch they're digging and knocks on the window. Dunk, the window comes down. Boss says, what? And he says, how come we got to dig and you get to drive around the car? And the boss says, because you're stupid. Says, what do you mean, boss? The boss says, I'm going to show you, explain this to you once, and I don't want to have to do it again. He climbs out of the car. He says, go ahead, hit my hand. Out his hand for the guy to hit, and the guy draws back and he plunges his fist toward the last second. The boss slides his hand down, and the guy drives his hand into an oak tree. It's right behind his hand. Oh my God! He's clutching his hand. He climbs back down in the trench. His buddy says, how come we have to dig? He says, because we're stupid. His friend says, what do you mean? He says, we're stupid. Go ahead, hit my hand. It's not bad, is it? It's odd. You'll use it. You might actually. Hey, there you go.
I heard that when I was a kid.
You did, really? Amazing. I don't think anybody's ever heard it before. I thought maybe I'd made it up, but apparently not. Okay. So in this particular situation, we have this geographic area consideration, smaller for less skilled, bigger and bigger as we try to find, you know, the right people for this job. Which, by the way, is an important consideration when it comes to equal employment opportunity. Because our relevant labor market, let's just say this is the relevant labor market, whatever size it is, has a number of qualified for this particular job. Those are Qs, by the by.
Oh.
Those are Qs. Yeah, oh, I'm thinking the same thing myself. They look like little protozoa or something swimming around. So what we have here, then, is qualified people in the relevant labor market. If you happen to have an inclination to discriminate against women, what happens to the size of the relevant labor market? How about if you want to discriminate against African Americans? What do you got?
30%.
How about if you discriminate against Hispanics? Another, et cetera, et cetera. Until you end up with a very small relevant labor market. You have, what I say, truncated the relevant labor market by non-job-related characteristics. Because of your own personal views on the type of person that should have this particular job. So, doing this guarantees that you're not going to find the best person for the job. You can't when you've limited your field of opportunity down to such a small quantity. Did you know that the average CEO is like 3 inches taller than other people in the organization average? Why is that? Are taller people naturally better leaders? Of course not. It's a stupid concept, but they look like they should be leaders. You know, they're tall, straight, clearly intelligent. They have that Bostonian look to them, right, et cetera, et cetera. And so people tend to do that. They put taller people into CEO slots, which is a form of discrimination. Maybe subconscious, but it is a form of discrimination. And it could possibly be seen as illegal discrimination because it's going to discriminate against women indirectly. So we'll go into all that at some length. I'm just saying it's underneath the surface. Quite often we think we know the kind of right person, and it boils down often to have a component of women or color or whatever not being as appropriate. How long ago was it that we didn't think that women could be police officers? It wasn't that long ago, right, that that women just couldn't do it, right? They just couldn't be what was needed out of police officers, which is to say, stop somebody, pull out your club, beat the shit out of them, throw them back in their car, tow the whole mess into the station, lock them up, right? That's probably not the best approach. They used to use that approach when it came to prison guards. Women worked the women's side, men worked the men's side, until they found out that men working the men's side caused all kinds of confrontational fights. The male guards against the male prisoners. But when they brought women prison guards over, there was, like, no fights. It just stopped. And the women would go through and do the inspections of the cells and the various other things that were needed, and the fighting stopped. Isn't that interesting? Really interesting. So, my point is here that when you're doing this search for people, you got to clear the decks of your own prejudices and search for a person who's qualified for the job based on job descriptions, job specifications, and the like. All right. So we hire from the relevant labor market using directed advertising. Only a small area in the relevant labor market, we would advertise maybe on laundromat walls and stuff like that. Wouldn't necessarily, I know it's the best I could do, but, and we probably wouldn't use anything particularly sophisticated in terms of computers to hire a ditch digger. I did construction and built houses for years, and I had a guy that I always called on to do my digging for me, hand digging, in situations where you couldn't get a machine in at the time. The guy was an unmitigated jerk. And everyone hated this guy. And he's just so obnoxious. Oh, you'd look really great with a pickaxe buried in your head, was a common comment from this guy. But did I hire him again and again, even though I disliked him intensely? Yes, because he had a business card and he lived it out. It had his name, and then underneath it it said human backhoe, which I always thought was a good idea. So I hired him, and he sure as hell could dig by hand. That guy was a fabulous digger, but it was his whole life, you know, his description, life description was, I dig holes, right, and I'm the best ever, which, whatever, it worked for me. When you needed a hole dug in a place that was really tricky to get to, he's the man to call, as much as an obnoxious SOB he was. All right, so you try to set this stuff aside to get the right people, advertise in the relevant labor market to find the right person, spread out as you need be, and hit the media, the computers, the job bulletin boards, et cetera, online, with what works. If you advertise for ditch diggers on, what's the one that I always get from kids now, the electronic bulletin board for jobs? LinkedIn, there you go. If you look for ditch diggers on LinkedIn, you're going to have a problem. Right? They're not going to be on there. If you're looking for marketing people or insurance sales folks or whatever, that's probably more likely. So there's a place to find people, right? And this might be at a different kind of more in-your-face location. Radio commercials, maybe. So that's an important consideration as you go to staff your organization to get the best people and don't artificially truncate the relevant labor market. As you go to hire, regardless of what you're stereotypically thinking. All right, then we go forward after selection. We hire. So this will be a unit that I talked to you about, and we have to do a training. Then we would have to go perhaps compensation. Then discipline. Stay awake now, come on. All right, and under this whole thing, under all of this, is legal. Or over all of this is legal considerations. So there's a lot to be talked about. And the only reason we're talking about it now, and at what?
What's after compensation?
After what?
Discipline.
Discipline. Yeah, termination's discipline. Performance appraisal is in here somewhere. PA, performance appraisal. Right. 50 years ago, there was no human resources class because there was no competition. Everybody did things equally and efficiently. Common rule, right? But now that doesn't exist, now that we have competition at all levels, right, this, doing each one of these steps to find the best person, get them in, get them working the way they need to be working, get them involved so that they stay with the organization, and after all this, don't quit, right, becomes an important aspect of a successful organization. And it can be done. Did I talk to you about your former student body vice president who's bringing his work back from China? This was your former student vice president back in 2001. He was a student body vice president. Anyway, when I got to go over to China to do some inspections, he was going over to China to start work for Aldisco Shoes, manufacturing of shoes over there. He stayed on and on and on and on and on, 10 years in China, making all kinds of connections, changed jobs a few times, got into making paintball guns and then lawn and patio furniture for a company that sold to various suppliers here, outlets here in the United States. And then eventually, he went into business for himself, helping people set up businesses in China out of Charlotte. He moved back to Charlotte. Now, what he's done is he started his own manufacturing under contract with Amazon to manufacture things that they want. And you can look up his stuff. I think it's under Kodiak, maybe Yukon. Yukon is the name of his company. Yukon Equipment or Yukon Discovery or some such. He makes a few things for Amazon now. But my point is that using good management techniques such as this, he believes that he can bring the work that he's been shipping over to China back to Western Kentucky. He's opened a plant in Western Kentucky, hiring the locals there to manufacture this stuff and using good processes and being closer, more responsive to customer demand and all that kind of thing, he thinks he can make a go of it and be successful. How interesting is it going to be to see if he can make it happen? It's going to be really interesting.
Impressive.
Yeah, it is impressive. He's an impressive kid, to say the least. He may not have been the best student I ever had, but he's definitely one of the most driven kids I've ever met. And he got a hold of a string and just started chewing it. And he's continued to chew it to this point. So I saw him the other day. I'm about to end class, but I saw him the other day. And it was a dinner honoring him over in the Coliseum and two other entrepreneurs. He was the young entrepreneur. So we walked out together with his fiance. And I talked to his parents, and he went out and got his car. He shows up in this Chrysler, one of those hot rod Chryslers with the windows that are a bit this tall all the way around like this. And he'd taken it.
The
300. Yeah, 300, and then with a bunch of letters. But it wasn't fast enough when he got it, so he took it to a guy that does NASCAR tuning and had it tuned. It was registering 550-something horsepower with a top speed of 170-something. Now, I don't know where you use a car like this.
The Autobahn,
yeah, ship it to Germany. But it was great looking, and boy, did it sound good. It looked cool, too. Anyway, so that's what he's doing now. Preston, good guy. All right, that's it for today. I want you to go over this stuff, make sure you've got access to the Internet appropriately.